back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, the 2nd of April, 2025 on Connecticut Today. Took a look at some ideas in Hartford to possibly deal with more of those street takeovers that may pop up during the coming warmer months. Blogger Chris Powell joined us again, this time with some tough words for the state's TV news operations and how they're covering the Waterbury home imprisonment case. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar joined us to chat about a possible multi-billion-dollar rate increase request from Eversource.
Yeah, a little chilly out there today. However, it's because I have the hoodie on if you're watching our live video feed. A little chilly out there today, but you know the warmer weeks, warmer days are coming, and that means it's only a matter of time until the reprobates are out there, the idiots, the morons, the gavones. They'll all be out there with these street takeovers. You know who we're talking about? When the weather gets warm, you get 1,000 of those ATVs. You get the morons and their Dodge Chargers. Nothing against Dodge Chargers, but muscle cars doing donuts because they have nothing better to do. And if you've ever gotten caught, as I have once, in one of these swarms of ATVs, it's a frightening situation. So our lawmakers, local and statewide, coming down now and cracking down, they say, they promise we'll see on those street takeovers. And these takeovers happen locally, and they happen on a regional basis as well. The question is, do you think the fines will be stiff enough? Now, again, our leaders, they're all saying the right things. They all, Democrats and Republicans, seem to be on the right page. Emphasis on the word seem.
For those who are thinking of coming into our communities, we're fed up with you, we're disgusted with you, and we're not going to take any more of your nonsense from this point forward.
And that's a guy I've known for years, North Haven Republican First Electman Mike Frieda, who gathered with the State Attorney General William Tong and some local officials yesterday, April Fool's Day in New Haven, to say, okay, here we go. We're ready for you, maybe. Now, again, they're looking to increase the fines and the penalties, maybe. Now, what do you think should happen to the vehicles of those arrested in these illegal street takeovers? That's our Facebook question of the day today. We're underway at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, text or voice there. Should these vehicles, these ATVs, even some of these cars that they may impound here, should it be just an extended impound, or should it be a permanent loss? I'm all for permanence. I like permanence there. So what is the proposal here? Now, again, these are just suggestions. You're going to get the usual suspects whining about this. You're going to hear them say, well, you know, just because somebody makes a mistake the first time, hey, too bad. I don't care if it's the first mistake. In this case, no. These takeovers are dangerous. Three bills are making their way, hopefully, through the General Assembly on this. They're under consideration for this. SB 1284 raises fines for people caught organizing or participating in street takeovers. $1,000 for the first instance and an additional $500 for the next two. Is that going to be enough? It would also allow municipalities to destroy the ATVs and dirt bikes of folks who participate in a change to a current law, according to Chief Carl Jacobson of the New Haven Police Department. So again, the idiots are coming. The idiots, they're coming out of their winter hibernation now. They're gassing up their ATVs. And look, I have nothing against ATVs, but these takeovers are idiotic and they're dangerous, especially with ATVs, with motorcycles, or with cars. But here's the thing. None of this has become law yet. And I know there are going to be people that are saying, yeah, we have to change it. But you know they will get lobbied by the usual suspects saying, hey, these people were just trying to have fun. Nobody else got hurt. No other cars got hit. What do we want to do this? I'm all for this. A bill in Hartford would raise the fines for people caught organizing or participating in street takeovers. $1,000 for the first time. Good. Hit them in right in the wallet, right in the keister there. If that's where they keep their wallet, $1,000 and $500 for the next two. Is that enough? Or should it be more? And then again, our Facebook question of the day, facebook.com/voiceofct. What should happen to the vehicles of those arrested during these street takeovers? Permanent loss? Extended impound? Yeah? Why don't we sell tickets? All the tickets can go to charity as we watch all these idiots get their vehicles thrown in the crusher.
Drag racing, street takeovers, ATVs and dirt bikes. It is no joke. It is dangerous to our community. It is dangerous to the folks that get engaged in this type of activity.
All right. So we're getting the warnings already. Maybe as these summer months are upon us pretty soon, the warmer weather coming, the morons, the idiots, the cavones, they all wake up from their slumber and they start drag racing and street takeovers. And a bunch of folks yesterday, the attorney general, there you heard the mayor of New Haven, Justin Elliger, some chiefs of police, they were out yesterday saying, hey, we need more of a crackdown on this stuff, and we need the General Assembly to pass a bill. Now, again, lawmakers talk a good game, and then they get behind closed doors. And, well, we're getting pressure from this group and that civil rights group and this group and the ACLU, and their spines suddenly turn to mush, to jelly, to pasta that's not al dente, as they say. Three bills legislating the issue currently in the General Assembly. One would raise the fines for people caught organizing or participating in these street takeovers. $1,000 for the first instance. Sounds good to me. $500 for the next two. Why give them another shot? Put them in jail for a while. Can we do that? And what do we do with these vehicles that are found and taken over? That's our Facebook question of the day, facebook.com/voiceofct. What should happen to vehicles of those arrested in Connecticut during the illegal street takeovers? Permanent loss, extended impound. Do we melt them down and turn them into paperweights? Why not? Attractive conversation starters. Why don't we do that? Bob in Weston leads us off today right here on WICC. Bob, good afternoon, sir.
Hey,
how are you? Hey, what's going on,
buddy? How are you?
Good, good.
All right. Real quick in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Go up to Bridgeport. Pick one of the kids up coming down from Boston. The first thing you do is close that station for Amtrak. Put it in Fairfield where there's parking. Mm-hmm. Now I'll tell you why. The train was delayed, so I took a little side trip on the streets of Bridgeport.
Yeah.
I got into one of those ATV crews.
Oh.
There had to be like 20 of them.
Oh.
Came up.
Oh.
And all I did was look forward.
That's
all,
it.
And one of them is glaring in at the side, so I slowed down.
Yep.
Didn't make contact. Guy smacks the window,
didn't
break it. Another one comes along my left side, hits the hood, puts a dent in it, and another one I had to stop because this idiot put his foot through the grill. And about, I'd say it was almost $5,000 worth of damage.
Jeez.
But you know what? I'm just a good little guy.
That's right.
I'm a big guy, but I didn't want to start a riot.
No.
And I think I was singled out. Because I'm white.
Maybe. Wouldn't surprise me. No, wouldn't surprise me.
All these guys are, I don't know, they could have knives, they could have guns.
Yeah. No, you did the right thing.
It shouldn't even be tolerated.
Paul, you did the right thing.
It shouldn't be tolerated.
Well.
And you know something? I didn't even bother reporting it because what good would it do?
Yeah,
now,
no.
I know how to fix it, Paul.
Yeah.
You got to get these little winky-dinks up in Hartford to say, oh, let's fine them this, fine them that. No. Confiscate the damn thing.
Well, they
put these guys make a mandatory
they do. And Bob, thank you for the call. No, they do confiscate them. There were 75 EVs on display yesterday in New Haven at an impound yard in New Haven. So, and I guess they do that now, along with scouring social media and all that. But Bob's right. That's a scary situation. I know a couple of people that have that were caught in one in East Haven. And, yeah, who the hell are these people to think this is okay? Really? This is, see, a lot of these people are just, I hate to say, but they're dumb. They're stupid. They act like animals taking over the streets. For what? Just to show who you are? To flex? No, no, no. And again, this is why. Now, I want to be proven wrong on this. I do. I want the legislature to say, hey, we got together, Democrats and Republicans. This should be a nonpartisan thing. It's going to be $1,000 or more to a fine if you're organizing one of these things. If we confiscate your ATV or your car or your vehicle, that's it. You lose it. But again, especially with the cars, maybe not with ATVs, we're going to get the usual, but how is that person going to get to work? They have a family. Too bad, huh? Guess you're SOL there, Toots. Maybe you should talk to your boyfriend a little more. Seriously, this is the kind of thing. I'm not trying to be flip here, but this is just not the kind of thing that I have any patience for. I'm not. What gives you the right to do this? Seriously. So what should happen to vehicles of those arrested in Connecticut during these illegal street takeovers? You lose them permanently? Permanently. An extended impound? Put them in the crusher? Hell, I'd give $100 to charity to go downtown in Bridgeport, Hartford, or New Haven and flip the switch. And see these ATVs turn to, like, sausage filling. Wouldn't that be fun? Paul in North Haven's here. Hey, Paul, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Paul, real quick. So I've discussed this on a different radio station, yeah. Independent Project.
Yeah.
The difference between street takeovers and street drag racing is entirely different.
Oh, yeah.
Street takeovers are a bunch of lunatics beating the crap out of your cars and running amok and all that. Street racing, street drag racing is what we did in the 60s.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Can't do it on the streets,
listen,
Paul. You can't, Paul, you can't drag race on the streets. Go ahead.
We have nowhere to go.
Well, Paul.
If down in Florida, they made a whole area, you could go drag race, you could dirt bike, you could quad. You could go, why can't there be legislation?
Well, then you need to suggest it.
That says, listen, they take on the weekend, they take empty parking lots, abandoned parking lots, pay a fee, $35.
Well, Paul,
state or the city.
No, Paul, we're getting tight on time here. Listen, I've talked about that. You know why that'll never happen, Paul? Honestly, here's why that'll never happen. Hey. Let's take your town like North Haven, okay? Mike Frieda, good friend of mine. All right, now let's say, you know, there's a gazillion places to shop in North Haven. But let's say one of those plazas, Paul, right, was empty, and it became empty for years. And somebody says, hey, Mike, they go to my buddy Mike Frieda, hey, Mike, we can get $100 a head on the weekend. Let's turn that into a drag strip. Now, Paul, everybody in that office would say, that's kind of interesting, until, Paul, the town attorney got wind of it. And whatever town attorneys, they would come in screaming and say, no matter how many disclaimers or how many releases, right, we make them sign, if you kill yourself, the town isn't liable. The attorneys would say, no, we're not going to do this, Paul. I know, you know, in theory, I don't mind your idea, but it's never going to happen.
I'm just saying that if that happened, they can corral them in one, get them to blow off steam.
Yeah.
You can't go to Lime Rock because it costs too much.
I know.
You can't go to Lebanon. Well, I mean, you can go to Lebanon Valley. It takes 2 hours up on a car, 2 hours back. It's an entire day. They're getting rid of these racetracks. They're getting rid of dirt bike tracks.
I know.
Where do you expect these kids to go?
Paul,
so where is it going? It's funneling it out on the street.
And that's it. No, listen, it is what
I
it is, man. Yeah.
The street
liability.
Takeovers are a bunch of animals.
Yeah.
The street takeovers, we do not, as a street racing community, we do not support any part of that. So there has to be a line. I mean, I know it's hard to do.
Yeah.
There should be a line drawn between street racing and street takeovers.
No, no. And Paul, and thank you for the call, my friend. Good to hear from you. No, and there is a difference. No, listen, there's been amateur racing with cars for years. But in this litigious society, hey, Mayor, hey, first officer, listen, we have a developer that wants to come. He wants to put a drag wreck quarter-mile strip in that old thing. Do you realize how many town attorneys would say, no, why not? Liability! hear our monthly check-in with Chris Powell. Check him out, the Chris Powell column. .com. Mr. Powell, good afternoon, sir. Coming off of that, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Paul. Hope you are, too.
I'm trying, Chris. I try a little every day. You have an interesting take on the Waterbury child abuse case and the role of the local media is playing in this. Talk about that.
Oh, yeah, I have gotten rather annoyed lately at especially TV news coverage where the reporters are interviewing people who seem to want to denounce the stepmother charged in the Waterbury case of the kid who supposedly was being held prisoner for 20 years. The reporters are sometimes inviting the their interview people to speculate on the woman's guilt, or you know, to make critical comments about her. And for the most part, these people have no original knowledge of the case. They're just venting, and I just find this kind of coverage just you know, gratuitous and you know, unfair, defamatory. It's certainly poisoning the public mind about the woman without adding anything to the details that we know. And this is really a common tactic with TV news. They try to cover a story, can't find somebody with original knowledge, so they interview a bystander who knows nothing about the case, and the bystander dutifully agrees that, oh, yes, awful events are awful. You know, this doesn't tell us anything we don't already know, and that, I think, is what the news ought to do, is tell us something we don't know. And I don't think anything that has come out over the last week or so in the case has told us anything that we didn't already know. It's really just reiterating the charges and creating a biased atmosphere toward the woman. And we're going to have to worry about complaints from the lawyer that
yes.
he needs a change of
mm-hmm.
venue and
mm-hmm.
that he can't find an impartial jury. And look, we need news coverage about sensational crimes, but we don't need unnecessarily disparaging, gratuitous coverage.
And to that end, Chris Powell, there has been the narrative, and we spent almost a whole show here talking about it, that immediately there were some people saying, well, this is what happened when guys and girls are homeschooled here. Now, thankfully, enough people are tapping the brakes on this, but I don't think enough. Now, maybe that had something to do with it or not. But again, you also have written a piece regarding who the real neglected students are here in Connecticut. And you don't think it's those who are learning at home.
Yeah. You know, we probably should have a system in which homeschool children are checked on by the state. Maybe they should be given annual proficiency tests and interviewed every year or two by, you know, DCF workers who can intervene in cases of child abuse. Certainly we need to check on some of these kids, as this Waterbury case has shown. But homeschooling should not get a bad rap out of the Waterbury case. The irony here is that public schooling is far more neglectful of students in Connecticut than homeschooling is. If we were going to check on the homeschooled kids to make sure that they're being taught and treated decently, we would have to give them annual proficiency tests to prove some learning. But we don't do that for our own public school students in Connecticut. In fact, we're very shy about proficiency tests. We don't have any mandatory proficiency tests to establish learning and base advancement from grade to grade and base graduation on. The irony is that the public school kids are more neglected than the homeschooled kids are, but nobody in authority dares to raise the point and try to change that, to bring some accountability to public education. Yeah, you know, homeschooling should have more accountability, but public schooling has none at all.
And all they scream, Chris Powell, and the guest is Chris Powell. Check out his stuff at chrispowellcolumn.com. What do we hear, Chris? Every year, more money. More money will fix it. And by the way, give us more money with the more money. It's maddening.
Yeah, well, we got more money. You know, for years we had more money with fewer students, and What are the results? Well, the few proficiency tests that we're allowed to have in the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is in a federal education department test, it just keeps showing that the only correlation between more money in schools is declining performance of the students. We never ask what we're getting for the money. I know what we're getting. We're getting higher salaries for the teachers, and they get to drive better cars, but that's all we're getting.
Well, wait a minute, Chris.
Chris, don't the car dealers like that, or the leasing agents? Don't they?
Well, they may, but you know, we don't audit results of public policy in Connecticut. Yeah. We certainly don't audit them in public education.
Yeah. Chris, finally, one of your recent columns deals with something that I talk about at least once or twice a show here. And to some extent, I applaud Chris Murphy for being out there. I've never spoken to the gentleman. I don't agree with hardly anything he does on policy. But at least he's trying to shake the trees and getting his party out of a coma here. He's saying it. The New York Times is saying it. But my theory here, Chris, and it's nothing earth-shattering, I've been saying over the past few days, if given the choice between crazy and broken, if you see what's going on now, people don't like broken. And Mr. Murphy's party is broken. Trump may be crazy, but he's there for the second time. And they just, Chris, there are some people in the Democratic Party, and it's a tragedy what it's become, who hear it, but they won't take the blinders off. It's maddening, because when the Democratic Party is broken, so is the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, the Democrats just don't seem to have figured out yet why Trump won the last election. I think the crucial question is, you know, how could the country for a second time elect, somebody of Trump's character and demeanor? And, well, of course, the country elected Trump a second time because it thought the Biden administration was even worse. But, you know, Senator Murphy was telling us right until Biden dropped out that, you know, Biden was as sharp as a tack.
Yeah.
I mean, Murphy was telling us that to solve the immigration problem, we needed another law that had, tons of exceptions in it for people coming across the border. Well, we didn't need any law. We just needed Trump saying we're going to deport everybody, and all of a sudden it stopped. Murphy's prescription for the new Democratic Party is exactly the loony leftism that elected Trump.
But remember, Chris, as we close out, the fact that Cory Booker just talked for 25 hours, that'll fix everything, I'm sure.
And you and I didn't have to listen to it all.
Chris Powell. Check him out, folks. All his great columns are there, chrispowellcolumn.com. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye. All right, there you go. And if your question, your text, your call, your email has anything to do with electricity, the electric utilities, rate payers, what's likely to happen, what's just blowing smoke, I will say I have no idea, and I'll ask this guy because he has an interesting piece that posted today. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media senior columnist and editor. Mr. Har, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm great, and you?
I'm good, and I see this piece you posted.
In the spirit of the great Broadway show and the movie, the rent is too damn high.
Yes,
okay,
so
your electric rates are going up.
Oh.
It doesn't matter what any elected official tells you about we're going to lower rates. And it's not a Democrat thing or a Republican thing. And it's not about your public benefits charges, which you're going to have a hard time cutting down anyway, because those are things that the public has decided it wants. Your rates are going up because the underlying cost of delivering electricity reliably, consistently is going up.
And I see, here's your headline, folks. Eversource wants Connecticut lawmakers. Hold on. I got a darn pop-up window here. Warns Connecticut lawmakers it may seek a $3.2 billion rate hike, Dan? Really?
Yeah, the story here is that Eversource, the vice president of rates at Eversource, Douglas Horton,
mm-hmm.
in response to comments made by Senator Martin Looney and others at a hearing,
he decided a lot of open questions came up at the hearing, at the hearings, plural, for the commissioners, David Arcanti and Commissioner Gillette, Marissa Gillette. And he decided, why don't I set the record straight? So he sends legislators, including Martin Looney, this seven-page letter about all the different things that Pura should know and should have in its records. Yeah. And at the very bottom of that
seven-page
letter, it says, oh, by the way, we intend to come forward with $3.2 billion worth of requests.
Okay.
And my column essentially outlines those requests, and they come in four buckets.
Listen, generating power, you and I have talked about this, generating power, managing power, distributing power, having a reliability to the grid. Dan, as much as people don't like it, it costs money. None of this gets done for free.
Yes, there are three big problems with it. And one is that because of the market that we created in 1998 for the free market for generation, we're at the mercy of a free market, which is not so free because it's fettered by Wall Street speculation. That's number one. And part and parcel 1A is that gas, the gas pipeline problem coming to Connecticut impedes the amount of gas we have for these generating plants. That's, that's one and 1A. And two is that we're looking at a revolution of technology in the electric grid right now. And that means smart meters, solar power, electric vehicles, AI, all of these things put more pressure on the grid to modernize, and that costs money, right?
Yeah.
And then and then the third sort of big force in this is the fight that's going on between regulators and Eversource in Connecticut, in which Eversource claims and the regulators dispute that the regulators are not giving them timely decisions, and they're creating pent-up costs. So right now we have $1.2 billion in pent-up storm costs that we haven't paid, right? Now, this doesn't increase the cost of electricity, but what it does is we haven't been paying for those storm costs all along since 2018.
Why?
And so
why?
We have and we haven't. It's a little complicated.
Okay,
anyway,
no way.
All these factors raise your prices.
Well, yeah, if I'm a business and you're holding out on me since 2018, yeah, I'm going to be upset. And, Dan, all this going on, I think you've pointed this out to other people, too. While Eversource builds some, like, underground pentagon of power in Massachusetts, right? Aren't they doing what's being referred to as, like, the big dig of electricity in Mass?
Yeah, we got to come up with a name for it, the big dig. What's an electric play on words for the big dig?
I don't know. The big juice. What?
Yeah, the big juice, right. It's 105 feet underground all the way.
Yeah.
It's 10 stories underground. It's a switch, as you said, a switching station. And by the way, it's not just a switching station. It includes 5 or 6 or 7 new transmission lines that are connecting this to that, Somerville and Medford and all that stuff where my daughter lives.
Oh, interesting. A couple things before we wrap up here. And you've been following this. And amid all this with Pura and everything going on, there continues to be this controversy, not with, I guess, Holly Cheeseman, who was nominated to join Pura from the Republican side, but a longtime legislator, John Fonfara, very powerful guy in Hartford. In a nutshell, what's going on with him?
You got to feel bad for former Representative Holly Cheeseman, who lost her election. She's the non-controversial appointment, but she's being held up because the controversial appointment, John Fonfara, that's also a senator from, or rather a senator from Hartford.
Yeah.
Fonfara had a business selling, you know, the alternative electricity sellers.
Sure.
She was a partner in a business.
Yeah.
And the business folded. I don't know whether they went belly up, but for whatever reason, they got out of the business. And around the time they got out of the business, they were assessed $57,000 for some ordinary course of business assessment that happens that Pura assessed them. And they basically didn't pay it because they said, no, look, we folded. Go collect it from someone else. And so lo and behold, $1 or $1.1 million in interest and fines accrued over a relatively short period, which I think has become, whether you're a liberal or a conservative, I think we can all agree that that is a piece of government gone amok.
Punitive, when yes. Yes.
When a $57,000 original bill, and we can argue about the propriety of the original liability,
yeah.
right? But for that to expand to a $1 or $1.1 million cost is I think an illustration of government at its worst,
yeah.
and that's why we got Donald Trump, because of crap like that.
All right, and
So that's where we are.
Okay, and finally, speaking of elections, I see you once again chatted with your current favorite Connecticut governor, the only one we have, Ned Lamont, and you tried to pin him down on running again, and he said what?
Well, it was not my interview. It was an interview with John Dankosky.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah.
Formerly of WNPR,
yeah.
now
yeah.
with the Connecticut Mirror,
uh-huh.
to give credit to my friends
no,
at
right.
the various
yep.
other stations.
Yep.
And in that, Governor Lamont said absolutely not the slightest bit different from everything else he said, which is, I will let you know in the summer after the session is over whether I'm running. His words were the same.
Yeah.
The tone of his voice, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and I talked to people, indicated a little bit more hesitancy mm. than we've heard before. And so the working theory out there is that last year before the election, he was highly, like 80%, I'm running
yeah.
for a third term, and that he's seeing what's happening, seeing that his legacy would be pretty good after 8 years and might be ruined after 12, given what Trump is doing to the economy and given the normal business cycles, and saying maybe not so much. It was the funny thing was he said, Dankosky said, do you still like the job? And Lamont said, I like it. And the way what I put in my column, which
yeah.
a Democratic operative said to me,
yeah.
a former Democratic operative, this person said to me, you know, if a spouse said that to their spouse, you know, how's your marriage? I like it. You know, you'd have a problem. So I still think that the governor is slightly leaning toward running, but we'll just have to see what happens in the next few months with the economy. Because if he sees things
yeah.
looking, turning down, you know, nobody wants to be a part of that.
He's no dummy. But again, I can just see, you know, the starting gate, you know, Susan Bicewicz, Scanlon, William Tong, Matt Ritter. This could be a really entertaining election, could it not, Dan?
I'm selfish. I like Governor Lamont, as you said,
yeah.
and I think he's doing a fine job. I wish he were a little bit more activist about things like making the Eversource Pura problem
yeah.
go away, as I said in the column.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I like the guy. I want to see him not run just because I want to cover that battle.
Oh, me too. Are you kidding? Between what you do and what we do here? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Geez. We call it show prep, Dan. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Man, we'll see. Cross our fingers. Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media. Dan, be good. Have a good weekend. We'll chat next week.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Dan Haar.